Welcome back to Leads to Scale, a podcast from Social Media Week. I am your host, Toby Daniels. On this week's episode, we were very honored to welcome the very wonderful Dan Bennett, who, among lots of things, is the Worldwide Chief Innovation Officer at Gray. We covered a lot of ground in this conversation, not least because Dan has had an illustrious career in advertising, but also because he's generally a very interesting person. Specifically, we talked about his early career at agency.com in the UK, and also the time that he spent at TBWA, JWT, and McCann, why he joined Gray, and what he's focused on today in regards to how he's driving change from within his organization, and why innovation is an overused term, and what it really means from an execution standpoint. We also spent some time discussing the unique partnership between Social Media Week and Gray, which we are very excited to announce in 2019. More on that later in the show. As always, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to Leads to Scale on your favorite podcasting app, and I hope you enjoy the conversation. Dan, thanks for joining. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
And I should also say thanks for hosting us today at Gray's incredible offices here in Manhattan. Really appreciate the hospitality.
It's great to have you.
May I also note how handsome you look
today? Thank you. I may have added that to your notes.
Oh, wait, I didn't write that.
No, that was my own work.
Oh, interesting. Okay, the infiltration of my script.
Yes.
Great start. So, listen, our friendship, if you don't mind, I'd like to call it that.
We're mates now.
We are mates. Yeah. Good. Well, our friendship is, for the listeners, relatively new. I think we had recently our six-month anniversary after we first met eyes at the BetaWorks event in New York City. And so, you know, in sort of thinking about like our relationship, our friendship, and thinking about kind of researching and preparing for this conversation today, I sort of dug around a little bit on the internet, and I realized there's much more to Daniel Bennett than meets the eye, or at least there's much more than what's like readily available on your LinkedIn profile. So I'm excited to dig in a little bit to Dan Bennett today, if you don't mind. So let's go back to the beginning of your career and give our listeners a little bit of a sense of the arc of your career today. So what's particularly interesting for me actually is that you and I were sort of like intersecting a little bit, I think, in the early 2000s, sort of, you know, back in the kind of early days of digital. You were at agency.com, I was starting my first agency. And I'm curious, like, you know, what drew you into the world of digital back in the sort of the early 2000s?
Well, firstly, I like the fact that you think there might be something more to me than my LinkedIn profile. I hope that's true. So what attracted me to it? So candidly, I was the oldest intern on the block. This was in 2000, and I don't know, the early 2002 or 2003, and ostensibly I was looking for a way into the advertising business, right?
Why?
It felt like the only place that I might be able to thrive, right, with my very limited set of skills. I'd done a couple of years at university doing a sort of photography and communications type degree thing, and hadn't fully realized at that age, because, you know, I was a 18, 19 year old lad who had no idea about what was going on in the world, frankly. I didn't know what I was going to do. So I went and lived in Australia, and I traveled, did a lot of that sort of stuff that a lot of us do or are lucky enough to do when we're young. And then I got back to London and realized, right, I better grow up. So my sister, who works in this business too, she's a very successful producer, she said you should get into advertising. You'd really enjoy it. So I hawked my resumes. I walked around London with my resumes for a couple weeks, literally handing them out to anyone that would take them at the agency. Yeah. And now I realize I was mostly just giving them to people who were probably throwing them away immediately. I was lucky enough to walk into one agency where the MD walked up to me and I gave it to him, and he gave me my first chance, and that was my first internship. I did that for a few weeks, and then I turned that internship magically into my first interview, which was at agency.com. I really liked it. To be honest with you, I didn't know a great deal about the differentiation between what would have been called then below the line or digital agencies and traditional agencies. But I learned really quickly during the course of talking with those guys what it was they were building and doing. And being a bit of a nerd myself, I felt like it felt like a good home for me.
There was something like particularly like genius about like agency.com sort of in that particular period, because for anyone who was like trying to figure out like, okay, which agencies do we work with, like get digital. Oh, agency.com.
Yeah,
they
right.
probably know what they're doing, right?
Right. Well, it was either brilliant or just the most awful pun,
right.
which also might be brilliant too. But at that time, it did really work for Acom or agency.com. And agency.com in the early 2000s was big. I mean, it was a substantial size agency. So I got a job there working on the British Airways business, and that was site development, online advertising, digital strategery, and all that sort of wizardry. And I spent about 18 months, 2 years nearly at agency.com. It was a blast. It was everything I'd hoped it would be.
I mean, you've had stints at some of the world's most prestigious agencies, including TBWH, Chat Day, JWT, McCann, and obviously now the most prestigious.
The most.
Grey.
Yeah.
What's the journey been like for you, though? I mean, obviously, you were drawn into this industry, and you kind of got the sort of digital bug, for want of a better word, and you have stuck with it, and you've been in this world now for some time. What was the journey like for you, and how have you seen the agency landscape shift over that particular period?
So when I was at agency.com in London, the guys that ran, or most of the guys that ran agency.com, left to start their own business, and they went to MSC Saatchi, and they started Saatchi's digital offering at that point. And what I saw at that moment was my first glimpses of the next wave of those digital agencies. And if you remember back around, this would have been 04 and 05, like we were starting to see agencies like Dare and Glue and those guys really, really come into their stride. And they were doing much more than just heavy web dev and UX and UI and those things. They were really applying creativity to digital, right? They were starting to merge those two things. So I realized that was probably more the route I wanted to go down. I didn't think that systems and platforms was going to be probably for me ultimately. Not that it isn't creative, but it isn't my type of creativity. So luckily at that point, I got an opportunity through agency.com actually to move to New York. So this is 06. And I moved to New York, and at that point, TBWA Shite Day had bought agency.com. And I went to work at agency.com very briefly in New York, and then 4 years of my career was then at TBWA Shite Day, working on doing exactly what I just said. I mean, honestly, applying digital silliness to Skittles and Snickers and Starburst and all that work at that time.
This sort of mid-2000s though was really interesting, because it's the kind of the beginning of the kind of the Web 2 sort of
yes.
era, and obviously, in many ways, the sort of the beginning of where social networking and social media sort of really breaks into the
right.
mainstream. And, you know, whether you're a brand or a publisher or a media company or whatever, you know, you're starting to think about, oh, okay, this isn't just about like creating destinations for people to come and kind of engage with our brand via our own .coms, but instead this is an opportunity for us to have a little bit more of a sort of a two-way conversation,
yeah.
or at least a type of engagement with people that felt very different to what existed before.
Right.
What was like that for you in the world that you were in?
So the best, I'll give you a great and or disastrous example of that. So in 2007 maybe or 8, but fairly early in the days of relatively early in the days of Facebook and Twitter, and not so early in Wikipedia's case, but certainly early in the days when those things were being considered for substantial marketing dollars, I was working on the Skittles business, and we decided that Skittles wouldn't have a website. That it, rather than have a website, the information about the brand would live on Wikipedia, and the brand's voice would be through Twitter, and content would live on YouTube. And so it would be a diaspora of channels that would work on behalf of that brand, and it was very modern and it was
but
very appropriate.
You're, I mean, for the listeners' benefit, Dan's kind of like smirking as he's describing this, but like that's not a completely terrible idea, at least in given kind of where we were and
yeah.
the fact that there was an opportunity to be experimental.
It was the right idea. It was just probably a little bit early in the development of those platforms, because ostensibly what we did was we took this brand that we had developed some really amazing communications for. The Skittles web back then was just crazy. And we applied that same thinking to channels that were open to everybody.
Right.
So suddenly, as soon as they went live, they were overwhelmed with, you know, kids across the country changing the wiki page and, you know, throwing up all sorts of inappropriate. So we lost too much control of the brand, and we had to rein it back in massively. But it was one of those moments where I realized there's a huge amount of potential in these platforms, and that was I remember it vividly. I remember thinking how exciting that was.
Do you remember like how much time you spent back then, like working on creative versus dealing with lawyers?
It was about 50-50 at that point.
I remember the same.
And it wasn't even. You know, the dealing with lawyers, 50% of the 50% was explaining to them what the hell these things were.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And there's still there's less of that now, but there's still a bit of that. And I think any brand that needs to take and wants to take risk, we did some work during the Super Bowl with Franks that got quite a lot of traction, and it was live. We were responding in real time to brands with appropriate emojis on their own Twitter feeds, and. You know, you get into some sort of choppy waters there when it comes to engaging with other brands. So we had our legal people on hand live during the Super Bowl to help just make sure we were sticking to certain guardrails. And I think as they've learned these spaces, they've become a lot more flexible. They've become creative in some regard. And I'm saying all of this stuff just in case our legal counsel hears this.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Oh no, they're huge fans.
They're the best.
Yeah. Yeah. No. So I want to go back to the kind of the question about this, the way that the landscape has shifted, though, because you know there was a sort of a phase of kind of like early experimentation and then some degree of realization about what was possible and also like what are the implications of putting, you know, content out there that people can kind of respond to in real time, but at the same time, you know, we're also starting to see an enormous amount of kind of disruption, not just within the agency world, but just in terms of like advertising and marketing in general. And of course, this is during a period in the mid 2000s when, you know, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, you know, are just starting to think about business models. They're just starting to think about, you know, their ad supported business models in particular. Kind of describe what that felt like to you at the time in terms of both the opportunity and also talk a little bit about like the fear I think that existed, you know, at that time amongst a lot of the agencies.
So the, you know, candidly, they start those the platforms you reference started out really salesy, right? And their immediate targets were the media agencies predominantly, because that was how they're able to sell that space, and it became really transactional and somewhat commoditized, and there were outliers from that, but by and large, that's how we originally. That was my original consternation about working with those guys, which wasn't usually in service of the creative, right? And over the last few years, of course, they've become much, much, much better at that. In fact, it's almost a complete reverse for most of the platforms we work with now, which is to say that creative really drives. They know creative and drives that great engagement. But you know, you have to remember this is back when. You know, microsites were still a thing. They were still popular, and there were brands thinking they would just build their own Facebooks. I think Coke did a version of that. I never worked on Coke, but if I remember right, they went out and thought they could build their own social networks, which was an appropriate thought at the time, right? Because who the hell's Facebook to think they can own this space? At the time, that was more than just a platform. It was an opportunity for legitimately for social media, and what we ended up with was really two or three large platforms that now almost entirely own that space. But at the time, it did feel much more like a democracy, like ideas could surface where we could all develop our own versions of this social network. And of course, we know how that went. So there was a mixture to me of concern about the commoditization of the sort of opportunities we had through those channels at that time, and I'd be lying if I said I had, you know, total understanding of what the future would look like on those platforms, but I was definitely excited about the potential for them.
Well, and then obviously the next like step or at least phase is then working with your clients to move them onto yeah. these platforms, into these environments, and then work with them to build, you know, fairly substantial audiences, which at the time felt, you know, relatively straightforward. I mean, if you're a Coke, it's not hard to amass, you know, audiences in the tens of millions, because, you know, that's literally how, you know, significant your customer base is. So that was obviously an interesting period of time, and sort of the glory days of social media in many ways, because like it was relatively easy to build audience and engage with that audience and get that audience to kind of react and respond and participate in whatever kind of like online campaigns you were kind of putting in front of them. But then obviously, you know, Facebook and the other platforms kind of pulled, you know, yours and also the brand's pants down a little bit and said, well, actually, you know, we're going to have to kind of, you know, start to have a new conversation, a conversation that's about you know, essentially investing money in being able to reach the audience
you've just built. You're going to start paying, guys.
And look, you know, we don't have to debate that too much, but I am interested to know how do you navigate that at the time, particularly when you're sort of like, you know, holding the hand of your clients and guiding them through what is essentially like a radically new or at least different space or environment for them to engage with their customers in.
Well, so there's enough's been written about this, we don't have to dwell on it, but there has been and there was a lot of you remember it was all about the likes and the followers, and you know, back in those days when we'd report back on KPIs of how many new followers we had, that always felt, if I'm candid, I think that always felt a bit shallow. It felt a little bit like it didn't feel like we were investing for the long term necessarily in relation to those brands. What I like about the maturation of social is that it's become much more of a vehicle for longer term, I guess it's an old school term to use, but longer term brand building. And I mean that positively, like, you know, the ability for a brand to have an authentic, and the best brands, there are many brands that have inauthentic voices, but the best brands have an authentic voice and therefore have an opportunity to over time build, use social to build their brand. It was not that way in the early days. It was about, you know, it's the definition, what is the saying? It's the difference between a campfire and fireworks, right? We were sending up a ton of fireworks and occasionally you get a bunch of likes, but there wasn't anything that was sustaining about that. So I don't know whether that was a good return on investment in the very early years for brands, but also remember in the broader scheme of what they were spending, especially in relation to what they spend now on these platforms, but what they were spending back then as a percentage of their broader spend, it was not a high amount. It was not a large amount of money by any means.
Right. And presumably they spend more because they start to see the effectiveness of these platforms in terms of not just engagement, but like return on that spend.
We know Facebook's had a few issues with that in the past few years in terms of honestly understanding the value of this sort of stuff, but I think they have got a lot better at it recently. And I think now it does have the promise and the value that it maybe was lacking initially, but any new media does. Every new channel has that. Every new experience that consumers over time learn how to engage in, the learning curve was steep, right? I mean, there's still only 15 years old in some cases. That's nuts. I have sneakers older than that.
We interrupt this episode of Leads to Scale to share a brief word from our sponsor. Leads to Scale is brought to you by the Messaging Summit, hosted in partnership with Open Message and Bonin Ventures. Taking place on May 1st during Social Media Week New York 2019, the Messaging Summit is designed to ensure marketers like you have the insights, tools, and best practices you need to capitalize on the next wave of innovation in mobile messaging. The Messaging Summit is currently open to standard, premium, and under 25 pass holders. However, to guarantee your place, you must first secure your pass to Social Media Week New York using the code LEADS2SCALE to save an additional 15% off your pass. Okay, back to the show.
So let's bring it up to kind of the present day and talk about kind of the existing role that you're in. So you're the Worldwide Chief Innovation Officer at Gray. Innovation is always a super interesting word for me, carries a lot of weight, but it's also a bit of a thorny word, I think, particularly in the agency world, as And forgive me for saying this, but oftentimes agencies, and at least if you look back on the last decade, have been like the last ones, particularly when you think about, you know, where disruptions really come from, they're the last ones that come up with like the truly innovative or at least disruptive ideas. So what does this role like actually represent for you and Gray?
So let's go back. We'll go back a job to McCann, where I was chief digital officer, which carries similar connotations. And to be candid with you, there's usually in these roles when I come into them quite a lot of scorched earth ahead of me. And that's, you know, not to pour cold water on anyone in particular, but if you come in and you're the guy that has, I think I was at McCann for nearly 4 years, right? So if you come in and you're the guy that has, you know, decks full of jargon, and you don't build bridges pretty quickly with the people that you work, the people that make the work, right? That's often creatives, but it doesn't have to be. I mean, you know, you need amazing account folks to sell work and brilliant planners to come to find the insights and stuff. But unless you start building bridges really quickly to those people, then these jobs are destined to fail, right? So if you come in, you're just the fella that has a lot of Twitter followers and, you know, is you know, really good at snake oily stuff, then it's tough. And so what I always endeavor to do pretty quickly is try and impact the work as quickly as possible, right? So how do I help work at a very from a very bottom up point of view on driving, it doesn't have to be technology, it's usually interpreted as technology, but helping to drive innovation into the work. And we think about it as there's a saying that our CEO Michael Houston says, which is brilliant, and it's the idea of, you know, one of the fundamentals of creativity is putting two things together that haven't existed before, right? And I think that also speaks a lot to bringing innovation to work. And innovation, by the way, in my opinion, and this is about one of the dumbest things you'll ever hear, perhaps, is really only just 1% or 1 degree further than what anybody thinks they're doing currently. It is definitely not futurism. It is definitely not considering that the world is falling and you're all failing. It's really about bringing one element to that 1+1 thing and seeing how you can make that equal 20, right? How we can develop force multipliers from a creative point of view and how innovation fuels that. So coming into Gray, we'd had some success at McCann, you know, which I enjoyed, and you know, great people there. But coming in here as a chief innovation officer, because these guys did not want a chief digital officer, which is fine. And just between us chickens in this room, I'll be honest with you, I don't give a monkey's what it is. I think the title is fluff. It's like naming a kid. It doesn't mean anything until the person in the role defines what it is, right?
Right.
So you have to come in pretty hard and fast and try and make an impact with all the people I mentioned earlier and try and help the work. And now my role, to finally get to answer your question, is there's two elements to it as I see it. The bottom up still exists. How do I help us make the work more interesting and better? And that can be individually in rooms with people, and it can be putting systems in place to do that, or it can be bringing in people to inspire people to do that, you know, people like you. But the top-down piece, it has become apparent, and it is desperately needed in our business, and I love it. The top-down bit is it's business innovation, right? It's strategically understanding how and what we need to add to our businesses to shift it and grow and evolve what we do, evolve whatever advertising is or whatever communications are. I think that's brill. I think I have the best job in the business.
I'm not sure how I feel about this, but I call my kids innovation and disruption.
Yeah,
so
no,
I'm wondering at what point in their lives are they going to like own that?
Probably they're little, right?
Yes, yeah, three and one.
It'll take a while,
right?
But I think what you've got, they're Latin, those names, right?
Yes,
originally.
Yeah,
I think,
as are my children.
Yeah, right. No, that's good. That's weird, but. That's right. They're going to live into. I'm glad you took my advice on that.
Yeah.
That's good.
No, it's the first thing you said to me when we met.
Yeah, rename your children. Actually.
Oh no, they had perfectly normal names.
Yeah, you're right. That's the way to do that.
Prior to that,
yeah.
Let me build on though what you were just talking about, because I'm curious. I sort of know the answer to this, but I think it's worth asking anyway. So to what extent are you innovating on behalf of your clients, right, and looking at like briefs and problems and how to kind of transform their businesses? To what extent are you innovating on behalf of the agency? And then thirdly, to what extent are you innovating on behalf of the industry as a whole?
Wow. That's coming from you, that's a surprisingly good question.
Particularly as you read it beforehand and said, this is awesome.
I read the first paragraph. Yeah. I was reading it on my phone.
No, sure.
I know. It's a great question. So it's probably not split equally, but here's how I think about it in relation to those three points. One is, naturally what I have to do needs to be in the benefit of the agency, right? So in my case, as the network, which in turn is intended to benefit the people that work for Grey, right? We have brilliant people, and the more I can help those people understand that it's a degree more, right? To not be afraid of it. We talk about it as being something that is certainly well within all their skill sets, because they're all brilliantly smart and creative people. So if we can benefit and help grow and shift the agency in meaningful ways and not be just full of hot air, right? That's a big tick. It's a big win. Because that in turn benefits our clients, right? So naturally, if our clients are working with a progressive group of people, then they're going to be happy and they're going to be doing great work. It's all in the service of the work, right? And the work, I think the definition of what it means to say the work has shifted, of course, right? It's much broader. It's a broader palette now. But so those two things are naturally connected. But however, I do think, and I've thought this mostly since I actually started at Grey, funnily enough, but there is a massive responsibility on probably everybody's shoulder, but I feel it somewhat acutely in my role to help to shift the industry, to help to help the industry get out of the way of its own hubris. I mean, I think we've really suffered from that probably forever, but desperately help think a bit differently and help push it forward and not to be full of shit.
One of the things that certainly impressed me a lot about you and the work that you and your team is doing is the sort of the outreach piece, right? It's looking outside of the agency for opportunities to collaborate, and opportunities to work on ideas and programs and initiatives that can feed back into the agency and breathe life into the agency, but also that are designed, just to your earlier point, to help address some of the problems that exist at the industry level. Can you maybe talk about some of those things? And and then obviously we'll then take some time to kind of talk about our partnership.
So the piece I mentioned earlier about that top down piece, right? The business of innovation as it relates to our business, I firmly believe cannot be done within our own four walls, right? You need great people, you know, we know that much. And we need to stop losing great people to numerous places. So part of what we've been doing since I got here is putting in place a series of partnerships at varying degrees of officialness, but still pretty official. So one of them is the partnership we now have in place with BetaWorks and BetaWorks Studios. So for your listeners that aren't familiar with BetaWorks are they were the first startup platform. And what that means is that they incubate, they accelerate, and they now host. They've developed an environment for builders and entrepreneurs to spend time together in their space in Meatpacking. So we're now the official creative partner of BetaWorks Studios. And that means several things. It means that we have to give back to the community like they expect everybody to. So we have our guys that will spend time in the space, whether it's planners, creators, whatever, sort of giving back and feeding into this ecosystem what it is to be a brand and how it is to develop a brand. And we also expect something in return from them. So we have their guys spend time at the agency elaborating on whatever the newest trends are, or spending time with some of the startups that work in that space. So it's about as honest as a partnership can be. We're working on another one of those, which probably isn't ready for prime time yet, but in the next couple of weeks might come out. Maybe we'll announce that around the Social Media Week in New York experience. And then the next biggest one, so there are a few other smaller versions of that, is the partnership we're doing with you guys.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. So the announcement is either imminent or just happened or happened a long time ago, depending on when this podcast actually sort of goes live. But at some point, an announcement has gone out and been shared industry-wide in regards to a partnership between Grey and Social Media Week, which I'm incredibly excited about. My team is incredibly excited. And we're just looking forward to an opportunity to work with you, your team, and the rest of Grey. Describe the partnership from your perspective. Like, why were you drawn to the idea of working with us in the first place?
So we have Grey has a burgeoning, I guess that's probably the appropriate word, social media offering, right? It's probably the, it's among the best I've seen in the big agencies. It's run by a guy with the best name in the business, a guy called Kenny Gold. Mm-hmm. What Kenny and his team are doing is, I'm very proud of them, right? And I think what we started 18 months or so ago, because Grey had a social offering, which was certainly substantial, is they've applied sort of slightly more innovative things into how it is they take, you know, what Grey does in social to market on behalf of our brand. So when we started chatting, we've always been massive fans of Social Media Week. I mean, I'm not just blowing smoke up your bum, but it's true. And so when we started chatting and, you know, we got a little bit of a look under the hood of what you guys are working on and how you're developing the platform, the experience, I think we were super excited about the potential to help you do that. And, you know, moreover, help you synthesize and distribute and think about, you know, how you get that story more broadly told, right? We know those experiences when you're in the city and you're at the event, and I've been to many of them, are really compelling, right? But we also know how easy it is when you leave those events to get pulled back into work that you need to do and your gas bill and walking the dog and looking after your kids. And so I think part of what we're going to do and part of what Kenny and his team of content architects are going to do is help to streamline how you tell your story, honestly, in multiple different channels. And it's probably, and maybe people listening are thinking, well, why couldn't they do that themselves? And I suspect that's probably, in fact, that is a very fair question. I think it's probably the same reason why you don't, why you're not your own doctor and your own plumber, honestly, because it's often easier to work with people that are abstract of your own business to get the best out of your business. And I think, you know, rather selfishly from a Grey point of view, I love the fact that we're going to be able to take that content to all of our people. Mm-hmm. And our people being our folks that work for the network and our clients. I think there's a huge amount of opportunity in distilling it in a meaningful way for those people and for your broader audience writ large globally. I think, you know, part of what I know the team here are looking forward to doing is applying trends as they pop up monthly and weekly to whatever it is you guys are doing, and just bringing it to life. I mean, listen, it's very hard to not make this very exciting thanks to what you guys already do. It's brill.
Well, I appreciate that. Bum and brill to just beautifully.
Is it clearly established British at this point that I'm originally from England? Have we got that?
Listen. I think the listeners probably would have caught on to that immediately.
Do you think so?
This is my 25th episode, and they're still trying to figure it out with me.
With where you're from?
Yeah, no, because it's you and I have been here in New York in the States for a similar amount of time, and yet you've just held on to like everything that was important to you about being British, and, yeah, and I just let it go. For whatever reason.
Now so. I sort of wish I had let it go, right? But anyway, that's another podcast.
It is definitely. We should figure that one out. So I mean, listen, from our perspective, you know, finding a creative, what we're essentially calling a creative insights partner and a collaborator in Grey, you know, it really helps us to address a significant challenge, both a challenge and also like an opportunity, and something that we've been thinking about for some time. I mean, look, we launched Social Media Week 10 years ago, right? We've scaled this thing. We're global. We have a big footprint. We have like over 1,000 kind of writers that contribute to our news platform. We have like, you know, thousands of speakers who share their kind of ideas and insights, you know, through 25 plus conferences on 6 different continents around the world. And you know, when you think about that, what it represents is an amazing challenge and opportunity in regards to how do you make sense of all that? Like, yeah, how do you capture the insight and the different ideas and even the conversations, yeah, make sense of it, distill it, and synthesize it in a way that can then be packaged and presented and distributed, not just to those people who are sort of like participating at the core of what we do, but those that we're reaching kind of internationally and through all of our sort of various different global channels. And it's not something that we've necessarily done a good job of, you know, over the years, but it is something that we think a lot about. And so it was, you know, somewhat, I don't know, timely, I suppose, in terms of us coming together and having a conversation and thinking, okay, well, let's just figure out a way to work together. Yeah. And it was just a case of like running through a whole bunch of different ideas and opportunities and then coming to this point and thinking, shit, that this this seems very synergistic,
and it's a great fit.
I fucking hate that word, but it felt right that we have a problem that we need help with, and that you were obviously one of the most well qualified a group of people to help us kind of like work on that problem.
It was a good fit. I don't think I'd have the cojones to say it was synergistic, because it's such a silly word.
but at least I admit it as soon as I said it.
You did.
Silly word.
Yeah, no, you did. I appreciate that.
Recovered.
It is a really good fit, and when you think about it, it makes sense in many ways. Not least of which, when you consider some of the global brands we work with. So, P&G being one of our big global brands, a large part of what we do with a brand like P&G or GSK or Volvo or any of these big brands is work out how to systematically help them tell. I'm going to admit to one. I'm going to hate saying that, but help to tell their story, right?
Right.
How do they shop in the world? And when you work on brands that big and that global, there's a lot of systems thinking that has to go into that. And I guess it's, in many ways, it's sort of like comms plan thinking, but how you take something that's really important, and important in the sense that I think the content you guys create is very important, and then systematically work out how you get that to the right ears and eyeballs. That's something I think we are suited for, and it's nice to be able to apply it in this way, because we haven't applied it in this way before, and that broadens us.
I mean, it's hard to not talk in abstract terms, as things are coming together and prior to us officially launching this, but Social Media Week is just a few weeks away. And not only are we sort of thinking about how do we capture all of the ideas and the data insights and kind of put some organization around that and package and distribute that as content through all our various different channels, but we're also through the partnership hosting Gray as one of our sort of marquee partners within the actual event itself, and you guys are bringing a ton of amazing things to the program. Can you talk about some of the highlights, some of the things that you'll be doing during Social Media Week as Gray?
I can. So one of the biggest ones in terms of your main stage would be we're bringing Casey Neistat to the.
How do you know Casey? What's the kind of nature of that relationship?
Casey and I are best mates. We are best friends. Casey and I are pals, and Casey and I are working on something else right now, or I should say Gray and Casey are working on something else right now, but I'm the one doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's right in the sweet spot of everything we've been talking about, right? It's right in the sweet spot of broadening how we apply creativity. And so I have this hackneyed line about innovation, which is that innovation is about finding new opportunities for the application of creativity, right? If you think about it in fairly simple terms like that, it suddenly becomes much less boogeyman-like. And so Casey and I are sort of bouncing a few ideas around right now on how that might translate into his world.
For those of our listeners, and I can't even imagine there are any. I mean, there are listeners, sorry, but I can't imagine there aren't any that don't know who Casey is. But just describe Casey, because he's a little bit
unique.
A fairly unique
individual. Casey is a filmmaker, but he would call himself proudly a YouTuber. I think he has somewhere in the region of 11 million subs. The way I think about him, and the way I've heard him described, not by himself, I will say this, is sort of as the godfather of these of YouTube creators, of which there are a lot, right? at varying degrees of maturity. And I actually mean that from an age and an ability point of view. And I'm not being pejorative there. Their content's all worthy, but some of them, like the PewDiePies of the world, are very substantial. And then there are some people that are, maybe only have a few hundred subs, but the stories they're telling are really powerful and meaningful too. They haven't grown yet. Mm. And Casey's a champion of all of that and all of them. His company, 368. Helps to bridge the gap between brands that want to show up really, really authentically and in a genuine way. And I mean this when I say not all brands can do that right now, but they want to show up in an authentic way. And then the creators that need to monetize what it is they do without just taking, you know, AdSense dollars, but actually working with brands to tell stories. So that's Casey. He's a pure creative, honestly. So we've had some really, really interesting conversations over the last few weeks about at this point, really, they've mostly been chats like this. But what that led to was the opportunity to bring him with us to Social Media Week and put him on stage and talk about the evolution of community and creative within community. Now I know there are some other activities we're doing on a few other stages. I think Kenny's hosting an experience on day two, and then a ton of other stuff that probably I should know but don't know the details of.
No, there's lots of good stuff, and obviously we're excited about the partnership. We're excited about hosting you guys in a couple of weeks' time and solidifying things, and obviously, you know, hearing from you and Casey. So, you know, where do you, and we haven't given us a huge amount of thought or even had much of a conversation because we've been so like heads down, just like, you know, trying to put the sort of foundational pieces of the partnership in place. But where do you hope we can take things from here? And what do you see as some of the opportunities that we should be sort of thinking about in regards to taking the partnership to the next level?
So, you know, I think what you guys operate is this giant fire hose of great content and insights and inspiration, and what I love about what you're doing with the platform is that fire hose is now, I don't know, let me think of another water based analog to this. It's, you're sort of trying to turn it into a system of sprinklers.
Wow, I was just thinking that. I was literally just thinking,
like,
about,
you know, sprinklers. But I mean, like, the proper underground irrigation. They pop up at nighttime, like golf course magic sprinklers.
Oh, okay. I was thinking about running naked through a sprinkler, like late at night.
I'm thinking about that now.
Okay,
That's a different podcast too.
Sure.
That, you know, that popular podcast, running naked through sprinklers while drunk at night.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? I love that. Who hosts that?
There's a business there.
There probably is.
It'd be a terrible business, but there is one there. you know, taking that and helping and working with you guys on defining how the nucleus of these brilliant events you do gets broader and reaches more people, that's mega exciting. And then, honestly, whatever can come through that system of sprinklers, that irrigation system, I don't know, but I do know that whatever is relevant and timely and important and zeitgeisty at the time will be able to be put through it appropriately. And I know you guys are all over that, frankly.
So let's switch to talking about Grey again just for a minute, because I know that you are in the process of putting together and launching your own podcast, which I'm very much looking forward to.
Yes.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about it? This is your opportunity to plug your podcast on
honestly,
my podcast.
Honestly, if you like this podcast, you will love Grey Matters.
Ooh.
That's what it's called.
It's very good.
Yeah, it's sort of
which creative agency did you work with to come up with that
we
idea?
We worked with a consortium of different agencies. It cost us millions of dollars to come up with that one.
Sure.
And we tested it. It tested pretty well.
Great.
So Grey Matters, among others, it's the brainchild of one of our PR leaders here, Graham Nolan, who's a creative and comic genius.
I literally love that guy.
Yeah, he's a genius. He is. But he's also, he's a Renaissance man. His idea for this is really pure, and I like it. And the idea is simply working with or talking to creative minds on how they came up with some of their best ideas. And I've been embargoed. I'm not allowed to tell you about who the first guests are. Yes, but the first one is Babs. Yeah. That's going to be exciting.
Definitely.
And then the second one was going to be Julian Assange, but he's now unavailable.
Tricky.
So we have got a great list. We've got a great lineup for the first few of these. And so it's about getting to the heart of great ideas, basically.
Wonderful.
And running through sprinklers naked while drunk at night.
Well, listen, if we take anything away from this particular conversation, it's that idea that we need to sort of put into the works and make happen. Maybe we can go to one of your clients and have them kind of sponsor it.
Here's what I think, Toby.
Yeah.
I think if you want to summarize this podcast and the idea of innovation and capture that in a soundbite that will probably appear in the news, it would be that innovation is akin to running through sprinklers while drunk at night.
literally a perfect way to end this conversation. Dan, thank you so much for joining the podcast today. I've enjoyed this chat, the opportunity to get to know you, working with your team, excited for our partnership. I'm excited for Social Media Week and for future collaborations. Thanks again.
Thanks, mate. It's great. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to Leads to Scale, a podcast from Social Media Week. Leads to Scale is edited and produced by Al Manarino. For the latest news and insights, or to learn more information about how to get involved with future Social Media Week events, please visit socialmediaweek.org.